God damn it. I forgot my towel. Oh, well. Oh, right on. At least one of us has it.
Hello and welcome to the Ritual Misery Podcast, episode beta 101010 for Thursday, the 27th of August, 2015. This is a show where two lifelong friends talk about geek stuff and whatever else comes to mind. I'm Amos, and after a long wait is that dude right there, Kent. How you doing, man?
I'm all right, man. It's good to be back. It feels like I say that every time we get on here. It's good to be back.
Yeah? Well, it's been, what, like 3 or 4 weeks or something?
Something like that.
The 3rd of July was the last time we recorded with you.
Not with me. I wasn't on that show.
Oh, you weren't on the show?
No, it was the week prior.
So that was with Richard then. Holy crap. Has it been that long, really?
Yep.
Man, so it was before your birthday. So happy fucking birthday.
Oh, thanks, man.
So there we go. There's that. Then stuff. Stuff. So Richard stopped by. Richard Gunther, he stopped by and filled in for you for one of the weeks that you were gone. And then everything just kind of went to hell, and my schedule tightened up, and your schedule didn't open up, and it was like a couple of virgin schedules just not going anywhere. Right. So, how you been, man? I mean, I know some things happened, and you kind of had some bad news, and you went and dealt with it, and I'm assuming that you got the 90% solution because you're back home in New Mexico. So,
yeah, man. All that. It was terrible. It was horrible. I think if anybody's been listening to this, especially if you know me, you know that my mom passed away about a month ago, and that was really hard, man. It one of the hardest things I have ever had to deal with, and don't take your mom for granted. It's I thought I was gonna have another decade or two with her, and just kind of all of a sudden she's not there anymore.
And so now you have experienced two things that I have not experienced, one of which I'm likely not to experience. You've lost your father and your mother. You're basically an adult now.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, that if anything, that defines middle age, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, it's...
So, it was hard. You've retired from your first career. You've lost your parents. Yeah. And now it's just you and your sons. I know I'm kind of putting a down spin on this, but I think it's just one of those life transitions that I'm not looking forward to going through any of.
Right.
It's kind of
odd. This has been a whirlwind year for me. I mean, honestly, it's been a whirlwind last couple of years. But this last year has been, especially like the last few months, have been a doozy.
Yeah.
So big time transition into different directions for my life and different things going on. And
so you returned to the States from living overseas for several years in a row, got divorced, found a new love of your life, mm-hmm. started podcasting, lost your mom, retired. And now you're looking forward to the next step. And it's kind of like, whoa, well, all that shit. And now that you got all that shit out of the way, you know?
Right, yeah. Okay, now I can get some business done here.
Now, and right. Flush. Okay, let's start anew. All right, let's go. Let's press forward now.
Yeah, pretty much. And I kind of hope that's the way it goes. I hope that, you know, all the crap is done, and now I can just concentrate on what comes next, and that's right. What I'm going to do.
Very cool.
So, but yeah, the last few weeks have been a big learning experience in a lot of different ways, and I'll get into a little bit of that later on.
Oh.
So how's your week been?
My weeks, like my month?
Yeah. Yeah, how have the last few weeks been?
Well, I went to Mudfest, which is something that we both missed the first time we were in Korea. And I got to say, that was a blast. I didn't stay out all night and do all the partying that I expected to do because I'm old and I was tired and I'd stayed up too late the night before. Partying like we're supposed to. And, but I had a ton of fun. I went through some great people. Ray didn't go, which was a sad thing. He figured it wouldn't be too much fun to be had, but lo and behold, we all had a great time. So, that was awesome. Let's see. I tried stand-up for the first time ever. We have a, you know, the O-Lounge Comedy Club, which we do. I do a podcast about for the big entertainers. Well, they have an open mic night on Wednesdays. And I sat there and I listened and I took some notes and tried my hand at that. Did a little 15-minute set. Went over fairly well, especially for the first time of trying some stand-ups. So that was pretty cool.
That is awesome, dude.
That audio, if I can get it cleaned up, because there's a slight problem with the audio, but I did get it recorded, video and audio, actually. Video is trash. I'm not even going to try to save it. and if you've ever tried to record a video with a spotlight, it's damn near impossible.
Oh, geez.
It just, because everything inside the spotlight is washed out. Everything outside the spotlight is too dark for you to understand what the hell's going on. So, it like, you almost need two cameras. I don't know. Maybe there's some tricks out there. I don't know. But if I can get the audio hooked up, I'm going to put that on the Patreon page. Give that to the people that are they're helping us out. And it's pretty good. I mean, it wasn't first class. It wasn't George Carlin-esque or anything else. But, you know, I handled my own for 15 minutes on stage. It felt pretty good.
That is awesome, dude. That's something that when I was in Germany, there was an improv group that performed at the, not the actual club, but one of the associated facilities that's kind of involved with the club. They had an improv group, and they also did open mic type stuff. And I seriously contemplated trying my hand at some stand up, and I never got it done. Never went and did it. And hopefully one of these days I'll be able to do that, because it's a goal of mine. And applaud you for actually doing it. That's really cool.
It was pretty nerve wracking. I mean, it was definitely a performance. Like, this podcast is me. This is me. This is all the idiot and asshole that is me. This is me. I don't hide anything on the podcast, you know?
Right.
Sometimes I'm lucky and you or someone else cuts me off before I really make a fool of myself. But this is me, you know?
Sure.
Going on stage and doing stand-up, you really have to disassociate yourself from it. It kind of like doing a play, and that's what I felt like I went up there and I had my little notes on my phone and I had a couple of jokes in my head and I knew how to, I was kind of going to build up to something, you know? And I found that once I got up there, it wasn't me speaking to the audience. It was me, performing for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I can adequately explain the difference there, but there was a very defined difference about halfway through the bit, I realized that I was not me up there. I was me performing jokes for people. And it was a distinct difference. So it was almost the most interesting thing.
It's almost like playing a character.
It was.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And speaking of which, there is a, at the same comedy club, the O-Lounge Comedy Club here in Songtan, there is an improv group, the 7MP improv group, that I'm part of. And we actually are scheduled to do our first show a week from Sunday. So this coming Sunday is our dress rehearsal, if you will. We're actually going to go through the segments of the show and kind of see how it works and get the mechanics down. Of course, that's open for the public too. If anybody in Korea is listening and hears this in time, that'll be at about 7:30. And then we have one more practice on Tuesday night of next week, and then the show the following Sunday.
Very cool. Is that going to be recorded as well?
We plan to record the audio and the video. It really depends on how it lays out. We'll probably work a lot of those details out on Sunday. But there are some people. It's basically going to be four competitors. Trying to win a weekly prize, and then at the end of the month, whoever's won the most prizes, like those four people, will go up and try to win the monthly belt kind of thing. And there's some great talent, and I think for the first show, I might end up doing lights and audio. Which, if you know me at all, you know that I'm good doing lights and audio and doing the production value behind the scenes just as much as I am doing the performance.
Sure.
So, and a lot of people are going to want to be part of that first show, and there's really only four, maybe five slots for people on stage because it's a small stage and just the format. But within the first couple weeks, I'll be going up there and being the performer. Once we get the, I think once we get the technicalities down, I'll go up and do the performance part of it. And I'm really looking forward to it. We practiced some games this last week that I hadn't done before. And I got to tell you, man, just doing improv, it's such a mental exercise. And I really enjoy it. And it really gets you to go off the cuff. You know, if people have seen our New Year's episode, Podcast Against Humanity.
Yeah.
If you watch the episode, you can see the smile on my face as I'm trying to go through and match up with the cards. Right. It's something I really enjoy, and it was pretty fun. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's something, and hopefully we will get recorded. If we do, it'll be a Ritual Misery production. So it will be in our stream whenever we get a master stream. Once we get enough downloads and stuff for iTunes, he recognizes. But it'll be part of our stream. It'll be on our website, and I've got full cooperation with everybody on board. So it's not going to be, it would probably only be like a 15-minute segment or maybe one game or whatever, because improv is really hard to perform and translate to audio or video, really.
Right.
So we're looking at doing that. That's one of the goals, is to get that going, at least while I'm here. So.
Very cool. Hey, yeah. have you ever seen a mountain lion, like in real life? Not at a zoo?
Yes.
Yeah. How did that go?
I saw it from a distance, and I immediately went the other way and didn't see it again.
Yeah. Man, so I drove from Indiana, which was a harrowing experience. It was supposed to be about 20 hours. Probably took me actually about 23 or 24 with all the construction and...
I can attest to the 20-hour drives. They never turn out to be 20-hour drives.
Right. Yeah. It was pretty terrible. Well, anyway, when I got into New Mexico, I was, I don't know, maybe 50 miles into New Mexico. I was in the middle of absolutely fucking nowhere. BFE, New Mexico. Down this dark ass road, because it was probably 10 at night, 11 at night or something like that. Dark as shit. No lights anywhere. No civilization anywhere. I'm pretty sure I didn't have a cell signal.
You've just described all of New Mexico.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, it was about 99% in New Mexico. And this mountain lion just decides to walk out in front of me. This thing is like half the size of my car. At least that's what it seemed like. The thing was probably like the size of a very large dog. Just very casually walks out into the road. Son of a bitch. So, you know, I avoided it, luckily, just barely avoided it, and the thing just kind of looked at me like, what the hell, man? I was walking here. That kind of freaked me out. So, probably about 10 miles, my heart was pounding. But, yeah, so I avoided that. But, you know, I was talking about the drive. I was actually really lucky to even to be able to do the drive. Because I had a snafu with my driver's license. It was like a storm.
Is this an Indiana driver's license or is this a New Mexico driver's license?
Neither.
Or a Nevada driver's license.
Yeah. All right.
Who the hell licensed you to drive in the first place?
Right. So my driver's license was a Nevada license. And, you know, being military members, we can have a driver's license wherever the hell we please. And the address can pretty much be whatever the hell we please.
Right.
So my Nevada driver's license had my Germany address on it.
Oh.
And I never updated it. So I never got the postcard that Nevada sends out with the little online code for renewing your license online and all that. So I'm in Indiana. Well, let me back up a little bit. My driver's license expired on my birthday, which was July 3rd. I knew that it was going to expire on my birthday, but kind of put it out of my mind because I'm going to become a civilian on the 1st of September of this year. And at that time, I'm required to do all the crap that civilians do, like have a valid driver's license in the state that you live in. With your current address. Yes. All of those sorts of things. So I had in my head the date September 1st. That's when I have to make sure everything is good to go. As long as it's good before September 1st, I'm good. So that's the date.
And this,
of
course, is prior to your trip to Indiana. Like you had already blown it off, checked it off in your head. Like, you know, I don't have to worry about that until September 1st.
Right. So I had to go to Indiana, and I get there, and like the day after I got there, I had to show an ID for something. I don't remember what it was, and I pulled out my driver's license, and then it just like smacked me in the head. I was like, oh shit! I looked at the expiration date. I was like, oh my god, this thing is expiring in like 4 days. What the hell am I going to do? So, Nevada couldn't help me because...
Right.
Yeah,
because you're not there and you're not there. You don't live there. You're not coming back there.
Right.
Nevada's like, we don't give a shit about you.
New Mexico can't do anything for me unless I'm in New Mexico.
Right.
So I'm in Indiana. Shit. What the hell?
Did you have to get an Indiana driver's license with your New Mexico address?
No, actually, no. They won't do that. So I kind of became an Indiana resident for about a month, and I had a whole bunch of documentation to show that with my Oxford, Indiana address. That I could provide to them to show that I do, in fact, live in Oxford, Indiana. because when mom passed, I got all of her utilities and everything switched to my name. And one of the bank accounts mom had actually set up to be that I was a joint owner on. So I had a bank statement. And I had I think it was a water bill or something like that with my name and address on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to use that as my proof of residency. But not only this, you have to have like a passport or a birth certificate. I didn't travel to Indiana with these things. And then also, and this is really stupid, you have to have an official document with your name and social security number on it.
Is this an Indiana thing? Because I've never had to provide that to anybody for anything ever.
It might be an Indiana thing.
God.
So, but I was asking them, I was like, wait, what? What? And they're like, oh, no, we need it. And they gave me documentation showing that they actually require it, but it's to be verified. So it means nothing until they verify it. So I was like, how about I just give me that piece of paper right there? I will write my name and write my social security number on it because you got to verify it. What the fuck difference does it make if it's a social security card or fucking fucking just dumb shit? So I got pretty mad about that. But anyway, so Stephanie had to mail me shit when she got back to New Mexico. She had to find my crap and she sent me my passport and, it was actually a W-2. She couldn't find my social security card. She found an old W-2 that had my social on it. Oh my God. And then, the lady, because it was a couple years old, the W-2, she was like, ooh, I don't know. It's not recent. I was like, my social security number is the same. It will always be the same.
Like it hasn't changed.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I'm like, are you, God damn it. I was so mad. And by the time all of this came about, my driver's license was expired by this point.
So you couldn't just renew.
I had to take the test.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. So yeah, I have an Indiana driver's license now.
Awesome. Oh,
son of a bitch.
So I'm going to piggyback on that real quick. when my driver's license expired, I was in South Carolina where my driver's license was, okay? South Carolina does not have the rule where your driver's license just stays active as long as you're still in the military. Like, it expires. They're done with you. They don't give a shit.
Oh, right.
So I went in there on my birthday. Now, it says it expires on my birthday, you know, April 6th. It says right there, expiration April 6th, you know, whatever year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I go in there and I'm like, I need to renew this. You're like, oh, well, this expired, so you need to take the test. I'm like, expired today. And she was like, right, it's expired today. I was like, no, it's still valid today.
Right.
It expires today. Like, it's no longer good after today. And she was like, and then she came up with this great argument. And I couldn't argue with her after this. All right. She said, well, it expires today. If are you going to drink milk that expired today? And I was like, all right, bitch, you got me. Give me the goddamn test. Just give me the test.
What the hell? Oh, my God. This was South Carolina?
South Carolina, yeah.
Oh, that...
Yeah, some hooker at the DMV in South Carolina beat me at a battle of wits. Like, I was so pissed. And I took the test.
God damn it.
And you had to... It's one of those separated tests. Like, you can only miss like 3 questions total and no more than 1 in like the last 15 questions or something like that.
Right, because that's probably the road signs.
It was something stupid. Anyway, yeah. I missed 3. I missed exactly 3. It's all computerized, so it's not like, you know, I could, you know, kind of wink or anything else. Yeah. I missed exactly 3, and I missed the 5th one, the 15th one, and the 25th one.
How the hell do you remember that?
Because I had to get, you could only miss 1 out of the last 30, or last 15, and it was only 30 questions, so it's 16 and higher, I could only miss 1. And I missed 5, 15, and 25. Fairly easy to remember that pattern. But had I missed 1 number later, I wouldn't have got my license. And I would have been screwed because I was there and I was on leave from Louisiana. Like, in South Carolina, you had to wait until like the next day. And I was like, fucking leaving tonight, bitch. Like, yeah. With or without. And the thing was, they took my license. They didn't, like, I no longer had a driver's license at all. Like, they took it. As soon as I went in there, I was like, yeah, I need a new license. They're like, okay, well, and then they took that one as my form of ID, and they fucking shedded it. I'm like,
oh.
So. I was like, this could end up very badly. So, anyway, so yeah, that's my piggyback on that story.
Oh, man.
All right,
driver's
man.
Licenses are pains in the ass.
You know, and then some states, like, what state was it? It's good for, like, 60 years or something like that. Is it like Arizona or something like that? It's good.
Maybe.
Forever. Anyway, okay. So let's move on to this right here. Or this. All right, man. For once in a blue moon, we both watched TED Talk. So I'm going to let you go. Yay. First. I actually watched your TED Talk after I watched mine. So we might actually have a discussion on this. So go ahead.
Right on. Okay, well, you know, I told you that my drive from Indiana was a horrible, horrible experience. Well, when I was younger, like in my early 20s, I really enjoyed driving. And I, in fact, was considering, after my military career, doing, like being a truck driver or something like that. I love driving so much.
Not a cabbie.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like long-haul driver, you know. No, I'm not young anymore, and I don't like driving anymore. It sucks. And not only do I dislike it for myself, but it is so fucking dangerous. Like, it is, like, holy shit. I constantly see drivers doing dumb shit. The mountain lion walking out in front of me. It's like, oh my God, like, fuck this. Like, fuck this. I'm done with it.
This driving is dumb.
So
Chris Urmson, How a Driverless Car Sees the World.
Sees the road, actually.
Sees the road.
But right. So when I went to do my TED Talk this week, I let the page refresh, and I was looking at the featured talks for the week, and this happened to be one of them, and it jumped out at me. I was like, oh, hell yeah. I've been wanting driverless cars forever.
Forever.
I've been talking about this for a while. So this is perfect. Chris Urmson works for Google, and he is on the project that... I don't even remember the name of the project, but it's the driverless cars. They've been testing these for quite a while. They're actually on the roads right now in California.
Or something like.
Yeah, something. But yeah, so he basically he laid out how these things work, like as far as how the computer sees all the traffic situations and how it makes the decisions and all that.
Right.
And he laid out a lot of statistics about accidents and road deaths and things like that. And something I've known for a long time, that almost all road deaths are attributed to operator error. It's not because the car broke down or because, you know, lightning struck you or something like that. It's because the driver fucked up or the other driver fucked up and you died, you know?
Right.
I can't wait, man. I cannot wait until we all have driverless cars. What is your take on it?
I'm so split on this. I think because one of the things that he discussed in the talk was that there's a huge difference between driver assist and driverless.
Right, right.
Giving the vehicle full automation on the road versus assisting the driver in avoiding collisions or other accidents.
Right. Huge, it's like the features difference. That right. It's like the features that apply the brakes for you if somebody jumps out in front of you or something.
Right.
Like that.
Essentially, what it is, the driver assist are making us worse drivers because they're helping us in ways that, you know, we're not used to being helped.
Right.
Whereas the driverless cars are actually taking over the entire thing, and that actually struck a chord with me because I've listened to CGP Grey and. That's the most notable one, but there's been a couple others who have talked about driverless cars and things like that in the past. And the thing that always gets me is they're not going to be effective until we eliminate all the humans, or at least the vast majority of the humans, out of the process.
Right.
That's like the, there's the turning point, the cusp of when this is actually going to become a viable product and viable solution is sometime after more than half the humans are no longer in control of the cars. Until then, it's going to be iffy because it's going to be too difficult for all the driverless cars to compensate for all the stupid idiots behind the wheel.
Right, right.
But then watching this video, and it actually gives graphical representations of how the laser technology works. It's actually like scanning all the areas around it, and it's sharing information with previous cars that are going down the road, and they're sharing information with each other, and it was really cool. I thought it was amazing how that part of it worked. Like, hey, this car ahead of you already saw that this, you know, traffic light was here, or this cop was on the side of the road, so you need to get over. So it's going to start trying to get over automatically, or it sees this guy on a bicycle over here, so you already know there's a guy on a bicycle. It's going to slow down, wait, you know, in anticipation of the bicycle driving by or riding by. But then it got kind of weird for me. And I can sum up why I felt kind of weird in a single word. Singularity.
Oh, right.
Like, this is just... Because my wife and I had talked about it earlier how she saw a video on Facebook about this new robot in Japan or Korea or whatever, where it's, like, almost lifelike and, like, you know, it looks real, it blinks and all this other stuff. And she was like, sure. This just reminds me of all the movies that are about the robots that are going to kill us. And my reply was, what movies? Oh, you mean all of them. Like, and this is just one more way that we're having autonomous robots speaking with each other, anticipating human reactions, and developing a course of action to supplant the idiocy that is humanity.
Right.
Does this not scream singularity to anybody else, or is it just me? Like, they're taking this out of the equation, and we're propelling it forward. Like, it's a little scary. I'm somewhere along the line, someone's got to draw it, and I don't know where that is. But it's coming.
Yeah,
it's coming. Well, Terminator is real. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I see your point. I still want the driverless car. But,
oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm all about it because the singularity is going to be after I'm gone, I'm sure.
Right.
Either that or I'll be one of the first people to go once it happens. So right. I'm good with it completely. Like, you know, this is a problem I'm willing to pass down to my children because I'm not taking part in the solution or the problem. It's completely ambivalent of me. So I'm okay with it. Like, you make my life as convenient as possible. I'm just going to keep on cruising. You know, it's just, it is what it is. And I'm going, you know?
Yep. Then after we check out, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah. Our kids, I mean, if they come back in time and visit me, okay, then maybe, you know. But until then, I'm good with it. Like, just I just want to sit down and be like, hey, take my ass to Walmart, and the car goes on to Walmart and says, here you go, dumbass, get out and go feed your fat face with shitty Americanized crap from Walmart. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm all about it. Like, but I want those chairs from Wally. Like, I want to be that huge piece of shit just floating around on a chair that takes me everywhere I need to go. You know, like, I'm ready for it, dude. My body's already broken down to the point where it doesn't even matter anymore. Like, I can't do half the shit that I want to do anyway. Might as well make it convenient for me. So it's whatever.
Oh, we're well on our way to that.
So that might have been the room talking. I'm just saying.
So what was your talk?
Okay, so I did the same thing. I popped up on the TED site, and one of the first things that I saw on there, because I always look on there to see what's, you know, new and happening and shit, right?
Right, right.
One of the first ones that I saw, sorry, I had to wipe my mouth with my towel here.
I forgot my towel.
Yeah, see, you can't travel the universe without a towel, dude. That's no bueno, man. Like, the singularity is coming faster for you than it is for me, buddy.
Hey, as long as you got your towel, I guess, you know, that's half the solution.
I'm not sure G.I. Joe has an equation for that, you know? Okay. All right, so I hopped on there, and I saw a TED Talk by John Green, and that immediately piqued my interest because I did not know. I'm a big fan of John Green from Vlogbrothers and all the science shows and everything else. Like, I'm completely coming to a brain dead point right now, but we'll have links for all of it in the show notes. But he's done Crash Course in History, Crash Course in Literature, Crash Course and all that. He's an author. He wrote Paper Towns and something about a whole bunch of Catherines and. What's that one? A Fault in Our Stars. He wrote that, and he helped do the movie and everything else. Like, that's all his stuff. His brother Hank is another one of my YouTube idols, if you want to call him that. He's amazing as well. He's highly entertaining. He's really outspoken. He's very smart. So I saw John Green. I was like, well, let me click on that. I didn't realize that the video was from 2012. Like, I missed out 3 years of this. Like, I've been a Vlogbrothers fan for years. I mean, it's eventually going to make it to our weekly tithe. I promise you that. Because, I mean, if we want to track the catalyst of this show back, this is kind of version two of something we originally worked on that was kind of like the Vlogbrothers, inspired by the Vlogbrothers, in fact. So anyway, I saw him on there, and the title drew me in as well. John Green, The Nerd's Guide to Learning Everything on the Internet.
Yeah, I almost watched that one.
Like, it was good. he goes back and basically he was in school, and all of his teachers were like, you have to accomplish these tasks. And he was like, why are these education points just hurdles on my path to becoming a slave to the man? And then he went to a boarding school because, you know, his parents are rich or whatever. And he said at that point it was no longer a barrier. Like, it wasn't hurdles that he had to jump over in order to get somewhere in life. It was the learning became part of the adventure. And what he's saying is there's all these people. He goes with ASAP Science, Vi-Hart. He goes with... there's like two others. One of them is his own video. And he goes through these examples of people. They're part of this community that is trying to teach and trying to learn. They're learning from each other, and they're all putting it all on YouTube free for everyone to explore. And one of the things that really got me about the video, he said, you know, YouTube is pretty much a desolate wasteland of comments, you know. If you look at comments for anybody, it's just people ripping on each other, bad-spirited crap, whatever else.
Oh, it's all troll shit.
Yeah, but if you look at videos about science and about people, you know, these educational videos, these entertaining and educational videos, most of the comments, like the vast majority of the comments, are people engaged in the conversation about the show and about the subjects of the show, and people asking questions and other people answering them or raising theoretical questions and really discussing the content. And his point was that there are things that he's learned on the internet since graduating with his degree and everything else. There are things that he learned on the internet. He may not fully understand it, but he, at least he's semi-comfortable with talking of the subject. And it really is a matter of sharing the knowledge and finding a community that you fit in that is willing to share knowledge instead of make it something like, you know, oh, you're a nerd. You try to learn things. Ah, you're a piece of shit because you're not, you know, Mr. Jockhead or whatever. And right. And that, I didn't expect it to, but that really spoke to me because if I was in school right now, I would get most of my, I would homeschool myself via the internet. Like YouTube right. has everything that I mean, I'm about to retire in a couple of years. I'm thinking of just using YouTube to homeschool my daughter.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, everything that I've ever learned is on there, plus more, and it's done in ways that I actually understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm fairly smart. I'm probably sitting at like an 88 IQ or something. You know, I'm pretty good. You know, I'm a fucking genius in Mississippi, right? So, you know, I figure if I can learn things on YouTube and really grasp it, and it can speak to me that way, why can't it speak to my children? And I think that is really going through the process, and it really raised my eyebrows. I highly recommend this video. And it's got a little bit of John Green's humor in it, and that's always fun for me because it's just off station humor. It's funny.
Right, so, on. I'm probably going to watch that today because I was about to watch that one, and then I saw the
it's John freaking Green, man.
Like, yeah.
It's,
yeah, I gotta watch it. I'll let you know what I think.
Much respect to him and Hank and the whole team that they work with. It.
Yep.
They make amazing videos, and Derek from Veritasium and everything else. Speaking of which, Derek from Veritasium just had a special release on PBS about the atomic bomb and about uranium and radiation and everything else. Hmm. I can't watch it over here because geofencing is stupid.
Ugh.
And but yeah, it's a documentary on PBS. I mean, fully. You know, fully funded and everything else. And I can't wait to see it.
VPN.
Like, it's, the problem is it's not readily available in places where my VPN goes. I gotta wait a couple more weeks for PBS to get their heads out of their asses. Okay, so yeah, enough of that. That is our TED segment of the week, unless you have something else to say about it.
Nope.
All right. There's that. And we still gotta find the... The trailer skit for that. And that sound is, of course, copyright TED or whoever, the organization, whatever else. We're using it maybe fair use. I don't know. It's
I think whatever. It'd be fair use. I mean, we're kind of paying tribute to them and directing people to them, so I don't think they'd have a problem with it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's one of those funny freaking things, man. Yeah. I think everything in the world should be just Creative Commons. Just fucking deal with it. Give people credit. Give people credit and move on with your life. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, all right. So let's go on to the next segment of our show. We have segments? What?
Whoa,
let's talk about the geeky things of the week, man. We both got a couple things on here. So I'll let you start.
Okay.
Because that's the joy of being the main voice on the show. I get to tell you to do stuff.
So, all right, Ant-Man came out about almost 2 weeks ago now, I guess.
Yeah.
And
I watched it and I decided to go to bed instead.
Mm. Okay, well, normally with the Marvel movies, I go out and see them the weekend they come out. However, more importantly than that, I always go with my son Lucas.
Right.
So I waited until I got home just a few days ago, actually.
Fair
and
enough.
Me and Stephanie and the boys all went to see it. And yeah, wow.
It was pretty good from what I understand. Like,
I enjoyed it. I mean, it's got a different feel from a lot of the other Marvel movies, but it's fun. It's like a really fun movie. Have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy?
I have.
Yeah, you know how that movie was just really fun?
Right. There's multi-age humor. There was catchy lines. There was plenty of action. Enough of the story to really get you involved, but nothing too much to where you actually had to put brain power into it.
Right. Now, Ant-Man wasn't the explosion gun fest that Guardians of the Galaxy was. It was actually more of a heist movie. It kind of had that feel to it, like an old school like a crime movie is kind of how it felt to me, with the Marvel spin on it. And it was, I thought it was really funny. There was a lot of really funny scenes. The ants, I thought, were fantastic. They did really well with that. I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed the story. Moved right along. It was a lot of fun. I definitely recommend this movie. A lot of people had issues before they even saw it. But just watch it. Yeah, just watch it, man. It's really good. And it towards the end, it kind of, well, actually, at a couple different places in the movie, it ties in really well with the overarching Marvel Cinematic Universe storyline. And yeah, it was a great fit. It was good. It was really good.
Awesome.
That was my geeky thing of the week.
Yeah, Ant-Man.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I almost watched it. I did go watch Toss and Blue this week, which is a pretty good show. I never went to see that until my ex-wife forced me to go 1 year, and ever since then I've been kind of, unless I have a very good reason, I go pretty much every year. So, I enjoy music. Like, you know, I'm very eclectic when it comes to music, so it's what it is. Mm-hmm. I played D&D this week.
Oh, right on.
I reached out and found a group here locally that was like, yeah, man, just make a backstory and come on over. And I was like, hell yeah. So I went and played with them. They have a little different of a gaming style driven by the DM that I'm used to. So that's going to take a little getting used to. But some good people, some good players, very interesting personalities. And I can see how a lot of that comes out into the characters. So that was fun. It was nice just to go and play a character and roll some dice and create a character again, you know. It was fun. I also acquired, this little doohickey here.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Looks like a camera.
It's a GoPro. And so I did the ultra burnt out thing of strapping it to my helmet and riding it on my scooter into work and riding it back for a couple of reasons. One, I plan on, I think there's some things around here that I could drive around and kind of look at and kind of give an idea of what Korea is really like in downtown. And two, because, well, strapped to my helmet, it's fun. So it was kind of a learning experience, and I figured I'd share because it's one of those things that, you know, nobody talks about. Oh, I just strapped it on and went to go try some stuff and see if it worked. It didn't work. It didn't work. It was crap. My helmet was far too loose. So the video was far too jiggly. And I haven't actually tried to edit it yet, but I'm sure it's just going to turn out junk. So I'm probably going to do a couple more runs and everything else. And it's very interesting seeing all the looks on people's faces when I'm riding my scooter, which usually gets some looks anyway, because seriously, it's a freaking scooter, right? So I'm riding my scooter, and I got this helmet strapped to my forehead, you know, or this camera strapped to my helmet on my forehead. So yeah, it's interesting, but whatever. And the third geeky thing of the week that I did, and I meant to share this with you before the show started, I wrote a segue for the first time today.
Oh.
We totally have him at work.
Paul Blart. You have him at work?
Yeah, we have him at work.
What?
Yeah, we do what they call Rolling Thunder, where we go to the hardened aircraft shelters, and we have boxes assigned to each one, so we have to check them in and check them out there. So they use those to expedite the process. Really, it's just a bunch of freaking fun. So that was an experience. Like, it was more difficult, and I don't want to say difficult. It was less natural than it appears to be when you watch someone who's been using it a while. Like, the first time you get on, like, you end up doing what they call the air hump, because, like, your body's trying to get you to balance, but then the machine's trying to get you to balance. You work against each other. It was interesting. I got video of that, so I'll be sharing video of that. That was very interesting. And if you haven't ridden a Segway, I highly suggest it. It was fun. I still don't trust it. I rode it for maybe 20 minutes, and it's still weird to try to like you're leaning forward, and the more you lean forward, and at a certain point, it gets to like the governed speed, and it pushes back against you. You're like, what the hell? And then you go to try to stop you, like you lean back and it feels like you're going to fall, but it's actually just stopping the machine. It's completely counterintuitive. But people make it look so natural. So I'll try it again. Maybe, you know.
Maybe you just suck at it.
That could be that. I'm not putting that past it. And turning, like you, the faster you go, the more you have to turn to get it. It's I don't know that I could adequately describe it in words, but if you haven't tried a Segway, just go and find one, rent one or whatever else and try it. It's an experience. It's very interesting to say the least.
So, cool. Yeah, that's I'll have to check it out.
That's my geeky stuff for the week right there.
Right on.
That and of course my towel.
Right. Yeah. And here I am without my towel.
Right. So go ahead. I have a little video clip about the reference to the towel a little bit later in case people haven't gotten it yet because they should have.
Right. Yeah. So we acquire a lot of things.
We do.
Man.
I tell you what. You know what I did this week? I started moving over. I've got, you know, several terabytes of hard drive space, right? And I started reorganizing them, getting movies that I've downloaded and, you know, saved and, you know, home videos, all that kind of stuff. Moved over to one hard drive, my music to another, and my personal documents and work documents to another, then my pictures to another. So I actually have some more segregation and it's easier to collaborate with them. And I've got about 10 terabytes of space in my apartment right now, and I'm using about 8 of it. And I don't even know like how much of that is actual decent and how much of it's like repeated and shit like that.
Right.
But that's one of the things I want to do. So yeah, we collect a lot. Well, people like me collect a lot of stuff digitally.
Right. Well, so I've been trying to make this change, I guess, to not have physical things. Well, I mean, I'm going to have physical things, but have less of it, acquire less of it, I guess.
Right.
Because as you already kind of mentioned, photos, music, movies, books, games. I mean, pretty much you name it. We're making the shift to digital versions of that. My mom, you know, going through a lot of her stuff, you know, she's got photo albums and boxes of photos for days. You know, there's stacks of, you know, like DVDs and things, a bunch of books, all of these things, and it all takes time to sort through and figure out what you're going to do with this and that and everything else. So I'm trying to stop acquiring so many physical things and just kind of, you know, I've been buying movies on Amazon, the streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, music. I converted to digital music a long time ago. Same with photos. Books, most of the books that I read are, I do still occasionally pick up a hardcover or something like that, but, most of the books that I read are all digital through iBooks. So I collect all of this digital stuff, these digital things that I own, or at least I own a license to them. What happens if I die? Cause like when my mom died, I have all of the physical items and can do things with those physical items. What happens when you die and you have all of these virtual these digital files that either, you know, either like you were talking about on a hard drive, let's say it's password protected, for example, or more concerning to me is my Google account, my Apple ID, my Amazon account, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Things that are password locked or account locked.
Right. Yeah. Steam, all of these things. You acquire all this stuff and then you pass. What happens to it?
Right.
What are your thoughts? Like, do you know what happens to these things?
Well, I did put a couple things on here because I recently, like earlier today, listened to the Current Geek episode 43, where Tom Merritt and Scott Johnson talk about Facebook and Twitter, you know, allowing people posthumously to control your account.
The memorial accounts.
But essentially, yeah. Right. You know, things like that. And then DTNS back in February talked about it in episode 2428, and they kind of went into a longer discussion about it. Mm. But as far as the rest of your accounts, like your Apple ID and your Amazon account, things like that, it's... I had heard that Apple would allow someone to carry on, but then for like music, it's your own personal license. You don't have like a permanent license to that. It's basically a limited license. So when you die, it goes away.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So you're basically leasing it for the eternal, you know, for it's a lifetime lease, the one time payment for a lifetime right. lease. So unless someone else has your account information or whatever else, other than like Facebook and Twitter, where you can set people to take care of your accounts after, you know, postmortem or whatever.
Right.
It's, yeah, that's kind of like a huge black hole. Now, another aspect of this that might be something a little bit more researchable. What happens when you have a joint account with your wife and you get divorced?
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's essentially the same thing. I mean, if you really want to get down to the bits of it, it's all just digital licenses.
Right.
But yeah, it's one of those things that I think, as we go forward, we're going to run into that a lot more, and there's going to be controversy about it. And, you know, because the companies that own the rights to it, that own the copyright to it, aren't going to want to just pass down those licenses, eternal licenses, you know?
Right, because, I mean, we run into that stuff now, like, just in everyday life, that let's say that I buy a book, and I'm like, dude, check this book out. Let me lend you my book or give you this book. I want to gift right. you the book that I just read. If I have a physical copy of the book, that's a very simple matter. Here you go. Right. But if I bought it on iBooks or on Kindle or what have you, what? I can't just give you the book.
No, Kindle does have a sharing option, but...
A sharing, yes, but I want to gift it to you. This is now your right. book. I can't
right.
do it.
And see, that's one of the drawbacks of going digital like that, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Now, as far as I can see, the only hope for a rescue for that, unless there's some kind of congressional stuff, and let's face it, I have zero faith that Congress is ever going to pass another law that actually means anything positive to anyone in the world. The only hope for that is that either you have someone that you give your passwords to that can re-download it, or, as is the case with this with music, is becoming ambiguous. Like, I purchase a subscription to, you know, Apple Music or whatever, and I can pretty much listen to any music that I want at any time.
Right. Right.
Forever. You know, as long as my subscription's active. And it's going to be the same thing where you basically, you know, you get like a, the Kindle lending library, you subscribe to that, and now you can borrow whatever book you want, but you don't get to keep it, and you can't give it to anybody else, and, you know, it's not your personal license, and once you give it up, you don't get to just download it back. It's like there's just, you know, certain limited copies or whatever else. And you only get it for a certain amount of time or whatever. But I wonder if music and basically media, all sorts of media, are going to become more ambiguous to the point where I pay $30 a month or $50 a month to Apple, and now I can watch anything, listen to anything, or read anything that I want. I don't own any of it.
Right.
But I have access to all of it. And I think that's kind of where the world is going, you know, at 5 years, 10 years down the road, that's, you know, we're going to be definitely more in that direction, because nobody wants to give up the rights to anything. And with copyright law and everything else, extending copyright owners, you know, rights to it longer and longer. So it, like, the death of the author plus 70 years now, like, this fucking ridiculous. You know, I wrote a decade ago that I don't care if I have the rights to anymore, you know?
Yeah. No, and I agree with you. I think it is going to go to subscription services. But there's still, even with that, there's going to be a digital legacy, even if it's just a password on your hard drive.
Right.
You know, your photos, you know, your photos are yours. If you took the photo, you own that photo. And I would assume that you would want your kids to have your photo. Well, maybe not every photo, but the majority of the photos that you take. I mean, you know, it's like the old school way when we put our photos in photo albums or frames or you know, what have you. And then if you passed, you know, whoever your heir is,
kids come along and throw it all away.
Right. Well, whoever your heir is going to take possession of those things. And, you know, there's not a lot of laws in place when it comes to these things and who owns them and who has access and all those kind of things. It's still, there are a few laws out there, but they're all in their infancy and they're untested, and some of them are controversial. And it's like, okay, come on now. We are becoming a digital people. I say within the next 10 years, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, within the next 10 years, there's going to be some serious movement on this, because the people that give a shit about this stuff, because like my mom passing, for example, she doesn't really have a digital legacy, so to speak.
Right.
But you and I do.
But yeah, but I was going to say, she's the last in your family not to, though.
Right.
Like
yeah.
Her generation, my mom has a digital legacy.
Right.
And she's only a couple years younger than your mom.
Sure. Right. You know? And it's coming to the point where just about everyone that dies, well, at least in this country, everyone that dies is going to have some digital leavings.
Right.
And we need to have something in place to deal with that. What do we do with it? For the time being, I think the smartest thing to do is just write down your username and password to all of your accounts. And
oh my
put it,
God,
put
like
it in your...
Every tech nerd that listens to this podcast is screaming at their audio device right now with you telling them they should write it down.
Well, no, listen, let me finish though. Write it down and include it in your will that's sealed, or put in your, you know, your flame-proof lockbox or whatever the hell. So, I mean, it's right. Not laying around. Somebody can get to it. But if you, in the case that you die, it's with your will. They can, you know, whoever your executor is can see it and access the, I'm not saying like to every thing that, you know, all your, you know, your Facebook or your whatever the case, but anything that has anything like your Apple ID or Amazon, things that, you know, there's value there, you know, it's probably a good idea to write that stuff down so that if you do pass or if you become incapacitated, you can't do things for yourself, somebody will have access to these things.
Right. Well, I mean, if I'm in a coma, you should just throw some headphones on me and let me listen to Stairway to Heaven forever. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right. Like,
no, don't. Like, don't. Just put on the 80s station, let it go. Yeah, and I wonder if I'm sure smarter people than us have talked about it, but what repercussions would we have if suddenly we had a law that stated, you know, your digital legacy, your lifetime leases, if you will, on the things that you've purchased digitally are transferred down to your kids? And at what level would that occur? Would that be the state level, the government level? You know, would that be something that the New World Order would take into account? I mean, you know,
right.
what level would that be? And how would it be enforced, you know?
Right.
So, I think that's a very interesting question. I think that's something that, like I said, within the next 5 or 10 years, that's going to come to a head, because our parents are the last of that generation that's not digital.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
You and I are both Gen Xers. Gen Y is definitely all digital. Like, they don't give shit about hard copies at all. You and I still have some collector's items, you know, but the generation previous to us, they're already in that transition phase. So by the time our, you know, the generation behind us, the 80s kids, by the time they are our age, you know, here in 5, 10 years, whatever, we're going to have something solved for this, because they're not going to put up with it. They're going to have
right.
issues with what we're leaving behind for them and then not being able to access it.
Right. Yep.
Or absolutely. They're gonna be like, "Fuck it, I don't need all those pictures anyway. They're just a bunch of crap." So, you know, I mean, there's your two sides. yeah, they're all on Facebook anyway, and Facebook owns everything. And you know, long live Allah, Mark Zuckerberg. So, so there you go.
Right on.
All right, there you go. If you have any thoughts on this, feel free to let us know. podcast@ritualmisery.com. Just shoot us an email, tell us how wrong or maybe right. I doubt it, but
right.
maybe right.
Or just go to ritualmisery.reddit.com and leave us a link to something.
Right. Link to all the articles we should have read before we had this episode.
Exactly.
all right. So I had an idea, man. I'm stationed overseas, and we get AFN, and AFN replaces all the commercials with these corny ass military commercials. Like they're corny, ridiculous things that once in a while you learn from, but mostly it's just
They're basically PSAs.
Yeah, constant PSAs about military life. And it gets... I don't even watch TV over here because I just can't stand them, you know? They're really cool for the first couple of years that I was in Japan. And by the time I left Japan, I was like, I'm done with it. And then every time I deploy, I see them. And now that I'm over here, I'm just like, oh, I can't. No, no, please stop. Just make it stop. So I was thinking, they had a commercial today about people at Comic-Con, which just happened a couple weeks ago. These stars, you know, doing the little, oh, I thank you so much for your service. And, you know, and yeah, that's fine. And that's dandy. And, you know, it happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if we had regional MILCONs, military conventions? And I'm not talking about, you know, tanks, guns, and you know, 21 gun salutes and all that other shit. What if, like in Vegas, they had a military convention on Nellis and said, hey, all you Hollywood stars, come on out, hold panels, do cool shit just for the military.
Hmm. So kind of like a USO tour, but a bigger,
more interactive version.
Right.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
You know? I mean, I think... What gets me is all these people are talking about how they, you know, they thank you for your service and you allow me to do what I do and this and that and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But you never come say hi.
Right.
So how much appreciation do you actually have? I've met, you know, Naughty by Nature when they came out to Kuwait to do a show and they sat there and smoked hookah with us after the show and shot the shit. And there was a genuine... Like, we're here, yeah, USO is paying us money and whatever else, but when it really comes down to it, we're here because we really appreciate you guys coming out here and doing this, and we can come out and do a show for you, and now that we're not contractually obligated for this and that, blah, blah, blah. You know, I partied with Candlebox in Al Dhafra. They were on all cylinders, man. They were, like, they have this itinerary, like, you go blah, 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 blah. And they said, screw it. You know what we're going to do? We're going to go where the hell we want. Like, you're not going to stop us. We're, you know, we're here to entertain. We're going to go wherever we want. So they went out and they were having lunch with people, you know, like we were just sitting there at a little table and eating lunch and had a couple of people. Like, they were all sitting at different tables, eating dinner, eating lunch, eating the same shit we were eating, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to say, yes, I appreciate you. It's another thing entirely to say, you know what? I'm coming to you because I actually appreciate it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know what percentage of people end up in Hollywood and end up famous. I'm sure it's pretty small. But less than 1% of the United States citizenry joins the military in any way, shape, or form.
Right. Yeah. I think that would be amazing. If they had a convention like that, oh, dude, yeah. That would be so cool to, you know, to have that access. Like you would at a con.
Yeah, exactly. But
just to have that access.
Yeah, I think it'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really, really freaking cool. And have it from, you know, all different genres and everything else. It's a fantasy world. It'll never happen, but...
You know, it might be worth suggesting. USO might be the focal point for that. Maybe we can get some buzz going and who knows, man? A lot of things happen like that just started from, you know, somebody came up with a dumb idea and, well, not dumb, but, you know, came up with something and suggested it and then the right people hear about it and make it happen. So, yeah.
Right.
I like
it. Yeah, it hit me today when I was at work and I just saw that commercial. I was just like, you know, let's have some real appreciation, you know?
Right.
It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, because it's the cool thing to say that, oh, I support the troops. That's
right.
The cool thing to do. Because you're an asshole if you say otherwise.
Yeah, it's by the much, way...
That's the current culture of it.
Hey, Hollywood, here's a message for you. Don't give a shit. Like, you can say all you want on some commercial somewhere. You can take 30 seconds out of your life to say, oh, blah, 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 blah. Prove it.
Right.
You know? Prove it. Yeah. I've gone to places where I had a possibility of being shot at, and I've gone to places where I was not welcome, and I wore the uniform every single time, and I meant it. If you fucking mean it, put up. Put up or shut up. Shit or get off the pot. There you go. Don't wait for some reporter some USO reporter to shove a mic in your face while you're walking down the Comic-Con red carpet or whatever, and taking 10 seconds out of your oh-so-busy day of partying. Like, prove it. Stop getting paid $40,000 to go on a USO tour. Like, just go.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's just me.
Yep.
So there's my two cents on that one. I figured I'd bring that up. And I threw Paul Harvey in on the show notes because I was thinking earlier today, and yeah, Paul Harvey is kind of like the first podcast I ever listened to.
Podcast?
Yeah.
Well, did he have a podcast? I
mean, no. But okay. His radio show would be like, what, 10 minutes or whatever?
Oh, yeah, the rest of the story?
Yeah, the rest of the story and Paul Harvey's news and all that, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because that was the first time I ever, like, you know what? I am sitting here waiting to listen to this particular person for his 10 minutes or whatever else that he's going to talk, and then it goes away. And it happened every day. Like, it was, you know, that was my daily treat all summer long, was listening to Paul Harvey.
Right.
You know? And it wasn't because he was big in the news, or wasn't because he was some hot shit reporter or anything else. It was just his style of presentation. And it was short. It was easily digestible. It was meant for the commoner to understand. Mm-hmm. And it was always entertaining. Even, you know, the worst of the stories, I still got a chuckle out of in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
So I was thinking about it today, and I think, in my mind at least, Paul Harvey was the first podcast equivalent in my life.
Yeah, so. Yeah. If he was doing his thing today, he would have a podcast. I'm pretty sure.
Oh yeah, and it probably wouldn't be very successful because he's really old. But
I'd listen.
I just thought about that, and I was like, you know what, we should throw it out there that, you know, that's, man, that just listening to Paul Harvey, man, it really made my day a lot of times, especially considering it's right at lunchtime. So
right, yeah, yeah. I used to really enjoy listening to him. Speaking of people that we really enjoy listening to, the tithe this week is Scott Johnson.
Scott Johnson.
Yep. Over at Frog Pants, the Frog Pants Network.
Yeah.
He is one of the first podcasters that I listened to, and this guy, he is one of my role models when it comes to podcasting. And I think you would probably agree with me on this.
Oh, definitely.
He kind of lives the life that we kind of aspire to have. He is a full-time podcaster. He spends his his days watching movies, TV shows, playing video games, doing all this cool stuff so that he can talk about it on his podcast. Plus, he has time for his family. He does all sorts of things with his family. He talks about them a lot, and he's doing this, all this awesome stuff, and getting paid for it. And that's kind of what we aspire to be one day.
Right.
You kind of follow his model. I mean, he's got so many podcasts too. He's got Current Geek with Tom Merritt. He's got The Instance, Film Sack, The Morning Stream, a ton more, a bunch more. And I don't know. I like his style. He is just so easygoing.
Okay, here you go.
I don't know. Help me out.
The Morning Stream daily show, Monday through Thursday. Diablo show once a week. The Therapy show that he does with his sister, a practicing therapist. Boop, a show he just started recently. It's twice a week, I think, about games, video games, console games, PC games, whatever. Comic Dorks is a weekly show. Autopilot is about the first show on a particular series of TV shows. Diary of a Cartoonist is kind of sketchy.
Yeah, it's an occasional once in a while.
Oh, come on. You missed the pun on that? Seriously? Film Sack, the review of old crappy movies. Current Geek, which is your first podcast that you really listen to. The Instance, the World of Warcraft podcast, so you don't have to. The Spoiler Show, and that's just the ones that he directly hosts, let alone the tons of them that he helps out with or guest hosts on or is involved with in some other way. That's just, you know, like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
He's insane.
And plus, he's a cartoonist.
Yes.
Like you kind of alluded to earlier. He puts out a daily webcomic.
Right.
Which, by the way, look him up on Kickstarter because he has a book coming out. His comic is called Extra Life or My Extra Life.
My Extra Life.
Yeah. And he's got a book for, I think, 10 years worth of the comic.
Right.
All collected in a book, like an actual physical book that looks really cool. So check him out on Kickstarter and take a look at that.
Frogpants.com.
Yep, frogpants.com. This weekend is huge for him and the Frog Pants Network.
So this
Both
guy.
Both of us.
All right, we need to lead up to this a little bit. Okay. This guy starts doing a podcast called The Instance back in the early beta, maybe late alpha of World of Warcraft. So he's been doing this show, weekly show, The Instance, for longer than World of Warcraft has been released. It's over 10 years now he's been doing this podcast. At one point, he's listening to Buzz Out Loud, featuring one of our previous tithers, Tom Merritt. He's listening to Buzz Out Loud, and he goes and he starts contacting the show regularly. He becomes a regular. He actually guests on the show a few times, like during their little fan days and stuff like that. And talking to the people of that show convinces him to become a full, like quit his daytime job and become a full-time podcaster. Like that's how he became a full-time podcaster, was by the inspiration of Veronica Belmont and Tom Merritt and Molly Wood and the Buzz Out Loud crew. That's what gave him the umph to go forth with it. My first instance with him was actually an old show called Forecast that I used to listen to. Is between him and Tom Merritt. That's how I was introduced to Scott Johnson. Before that, I may have heard him a few times or whatever on different episodes of Buzz Out Loud, but it wasn't something that really struck me until that show, and I was listening to it, and it was a great show. They kind of do a segment about it now in the current Geek show. So he went through all of this, and he's gotten to the level, 80-something thousand downloads of his weekly show, The Instance, plus all the other podcasts or whatever else, plus his illustrations and whatever he's contracted for and all, his works and all that stuff. Now he has his own fucking con, his own convention.
Yes.
Like, he started out just wanting to watch a movie with some people there in Salt Lake City, Utah, at one of the local theaters, and that was like 6 or 7 years ago, and now he's at the point where they rent out an entire vacation area, the Snowbird Resort. They rent the whole thing out. Like, it's all theirs for a 3-day nerd convention.
Yeah, and it's even called Nerdtacular.
Nerdtacular. I mean, that's so he's gone from the baseline. I'm just this podcast thing. It's kind of cool. I might do it a little bit. Throw 5-10 minutes out there once a week about this cool game that I'm now playing or whatever. Mm. To he lives on the internet. Does an hour and a half daily show 4 days a week. He's doing 20 podcasts or whatever on a weekly basis, and now he's got his own fucking con. In Salt Lake City, like in the middle of the country.
Yep.
It blows me away. Like he is so amazing. And then listening to his shows, whatever else, it's just awesome.
Yep. He has reached pretty much the pinnacle of success when it comes to podcasters. I really admire the guy. Check him out. If you don't know who he is, check him out. Frogpants.com.
And you add into that his family life and I've never actually met him. Let's just be honest. I mean, me and you have missed out on Nerdtacular every year because of one reason or another. You missed out this year because of things that recently happened. I'm missing out this year because of I'm in Korea.
Yeah.
So we've never actually met Scott Johnson. And yet he's still a role model as far as how he fathers his kids. About how he takes his profession seriously, about how he went on a limb and said, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go all in. This is now my job and my livelihood and my life. Just an amazing dude. So.
Yep.
That's my thoughts anyway. You got anything else about it?
Nope, you nailed it.
Cool. All right, so Scott Johnson, if you ever do listen to this, man, we appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks, dude.
all right, so that wraps up a pretty good show, actually.
I had fun. we pretty much talked about life, the universe, and everything.
Yeah, yeah, it really did just wrap it up in a nice and neat little package. You know, and I brought my towel, so, you know, it helped, you know, it's kind of warm in here, and, you know.
It's always useful.
Yeah, you know, you can't leave home without it.
Right.
So there's that. And, you know, if you enjoyed this show as much as we did, which I don't know. I enjoyed it pretty much. cruise on over to ritualmisery.com, click on the Amazon banner, or go to ritualmisery.com/support. And there's tons of ways that you can help us keep this show going and make it more of a regular thing, and try to get us one step closer to Scott Johnson, Tom Merritt level. Or, you know, just Richard Gunther. Like, I mean, he's like a middle player, and we'd love to be up in there with him too. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to give us ideas about the show, you can always go to Reddit, ritualmisery.reddit.com. And, well, they can always follow your exploits on RateBeer, man.
Yeah, just look up username Del Noche on ratebeer.com.
Have you rated any beers lately?
I rated one probably 2 weeks ago or something.
Yeah? Yeah,
just one, though. So not a whole lot of activity for me on there lately.
The only beer I've been drinking lately is Height on tap because it's cheap.
It's cheap, yeah.
It's like the Korean. It's like the Korean version of Budweiser, and for some reason, it's like just better.
Yeah. I went to the brewery. Did I tell you that? I went to the Height Brewery when I was there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I thought about taking the trip, but you know, I don't know. It depends on how much free beer they give me, I guess. I do want to plug OLCC, the O Lounge Comedy Cast. Semi-regular releases as performers come along through the club, taking those and publishing those so that people can enjoy the entertainment that I get to enjoy every couple weeks or so. Very fun, and it's fun for me to produce it. It's fun practice, and it's a great show to go to. So if you are in the Ostan area, feel free to come by. I'll get you in the door if you can't handle the door fee. I'll make it happen. I got a damn t-shirt now. I'm like practically an employee. So I do want to plug that. That's also where the improv group stuff is going to go. So I'm really looking forward to that. Really looking forward to that. It's going to be really fun.
Yeah, right on.
All right. You can follow the show on Twitter at Ritual Misery. You can email us, like I said before, podcast@ritualmisery.com. You can find us on our home on the web, which is that ritualmisery.com. If you really want to, you can call and leave us a voicemail, 567-69-TRMPC. That's 567-698-7672. The music that you should be hearing very shortly comes courtesy of Kevin McLeod, doing great things over there on incomptech.com. Thank you for listening. For Kent, for me, for you, this is your Ritual Misery Podcast.
See ya.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.